Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Tillman, and thank you for joining me today for another exciting show on what women must know. It's great having you with me, and as always, we are exploring topics that are of particular relevance to our health and well-being, and certainly will support you on your healing journey. And remember, it's all about getting empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible regarding your health and well-being. And to support you, I just want to remind everyone who may be listening for the first time that my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, has great posts on a daily basis. I sometimes get very enthusiastic and post several, two, three, or more a day, but there are always relevant pieces of news, of recipes, strategies, inspirational information. So you can always be learning when you go to that Facebook page, What Women Must Know. And if you have not yet opted into my website, What Women Must Know, please do so because you will receive several free special reports and articles. I have lots of great information. There'll be more added shortly. So a great place to browse educational material, and it's all for free. So please do take advantage of the opportunities to learn, to grow, to heal, to get empowered. Well, speaking of to learn, to heal, to grow, and to get empowered, today we're going to be talking about food allergies. Many of you may not know that allergies are the fifth leading chronic illness in the United States, and since the mid-1990s, food allergies have shifted into high gear. What used to be a relative rarity has become increasingly commonplace, with scientists estimating that the problem is getting worse. Today, we're going to discover the causes behind the allergy epidemic and ways that we can reduce our reactions and hopefully even reduce the, allergic response going on within us. And to help us journey into the world of allergies is my guest today, Mireille Schwartz, and just a little bit about her. With a lifelong severe allergy to fish and family members, each suffering from different food allergies, Mireille Schwartz served as a board member of the Board of Directors for FAN, F-A-A-N, the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, from 2009 to 2011. FAN, now known as Food Allergy Research and Education, is the world's largest leading nonprofit allergy resource and works with policymakers on federal, state, and local initiatives in areas such as food labeling, epinephrine availability, and management of food allergies in schools, camps, airlines, and restaurants. Mireille is CEO and founder of the Bay Area Allergy Advisory Board, founded in 2007. The mission of the Bay Area Allergy Advisory Board is to promote education, awareness, and to provide no-cost medical care and medication to Bay Area families with severely allergic children. In 2009 and 10, she was named honorary chairman of FAN's Food Allergy Walkathon, and she is also the recipient of a 2009 Change Starts at Home Changemakers Award for outstanding advocacy for food allergic children, and the Huffington Post's Greatest Person of the Day Award in 2011. In 2013, Mireille and her family were featured in the Discovery Channel documentary An Emerging Epidemic, Food Allergies in America. The author of the Family Food Allergy Book and the upcoming Parents Guide to Food Allergies, you can see why Mireille Schwartz is such a powerful voice in the world of education and strategies for helping people with severe food allergies. She lives with her family in San Francisco, and it's a pleasure to have her on the show today. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Tillman. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, you have been doing such amazing work, and it sounds like it all started with your own personal challenge regarding allergies.
It did. Food allergies are incredibly unpredictable. The face and profile of food allergies has changed dramatically over the last several decades. As I have come of age with this medical condition, the awareness piece and the education have become very mainstream and well known. So there is an infrastructure and a support and ideally a cure on the horizon that just didn't exist those decades ago.
So tell us about your personal encounters with the food allergy experience. What happened to you?
As far back as I can recall with my seafood allergy, as a very, very young infant, I was fed mashed fish as an excellent, of course, source of protein and nourishment, and immediately, just as a baby, began exhibiting these very violent symptoms that didn't seem to be colic or gastrointestinal, more dramatic, difficulty breathing, facial swelling. This was before the epinephrine auto-injectors were even on the market, so it was a little bit of a puzzle to solve back then. We did solve it with the help of a team with a pediatrician and a nutritionist and an allergist. And so what I did back then, and as I grew and came of age, was lived with this very strict avoidance. Now today, there are promising new clinical trials to fight food allergies, but still no medication can be taken to prevent the food allergies. So to date, strict avoidance of that allergy-causing food is still the best way to avoid a reaction.
So did you go into anaphylactic shock when you had some seaweed? Was it life-threatening for you?
Oh, several times, yes. That was there was a period of time there when it was a revolving door of emergency room visits as we tried to determine and understand the root cause of what was causing my illness. Absolutely, I would have very pronounced difficulty breathing, a drop in blood pressure. I think people sometimes think that allergies are a sneeze or itchy eyes. And while those are some of the symptoms of a less allergic reaction, what I had is known as anaphylaxis, which is a very dramatic and severe allergic response.
You know, it's interesting that I have one of my brothers has that same allergy to seafood. He's the only one in the family. It's kind of mystery, but when he inadvertently has something with seafood, and it's usually, you know, crustaceous kind of seafood, so we can't do shrimp or crabs, things like that, but the throat swells up, and, you know, of course, he can't breathe. It's just pretty scary when that happens, and he's had that his whole life as well.
Yeah, and in fact, how severe the reaction is and which symptoms you get can and does change from one reaction to the next. And although ingestion is the primary cause of severe reactions, in some cases, especially with the crustaceans that you mentioned and the steam even, the aerosolized protein from cooking shellfish, just breathing in the food protein can cause those same symptoms.
Wow. So is there any speculation as to why that is? Why shellfish? I know there are other foods that can do that, but the shellfish seem to be particularly, you know, powerful with this allergy reaction.
It is, because it is one of the few allergens that has that very pronounced and serious aerosolized protein. When the protein gets into the air and heats up in the steam or in an oil, it becomes almost like a super protein and attacks your airways just through your nasal cavity and straight down into your lungs, sort of like a main, a highway right to your system.
Wow. So, you know, as we said earlier, allergies are the fifth leading chronic illness in the United States. It's estimated that more than 12 million Americans have food allergies. What do you find is the cause behind this?
Well, there are some theories as to why food allergies are on the rise. And this prevalence of food allergy has absolutely become a leading emerging epidemic. There's sort of three very popular hypotheses. There's heredity, there's the hygiene hypothesis, and then there's the GMO theory. So for the heredity, allergic diseases such as asthma, an allergic rhinitis or a hay fever or eczema, they do usually tend to run in families. Of course, there are situations like your brother where they don't, but the tendency to have food allergies is definitely inherited. For example, my parents have food allergies. I have food allergies, and my daughter has food allergies.
Are they the same one?
Then there's no, all to different foods. And in fact, interestingly, I have a new colleague who is a twin, and they even share the same fingerprint. They are both severely food allergic, and none of their two food allergies are the same, and they are allergic to multiple foods.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Then there's the hygiene hypothesis. And this is probably right now the most popular premise that scientists are suggesting, that it's actually the overly sanitized state of our modern environment that is upsetting that normal development of our immune systems, and that that's leading to a possible dramatic overproduction of these specific allergy-causing antibodies. So the main idea of that is that decreased exposure to, say, you know, germs and just disease-causing substances due to just the general characteristics of our ultra-clean modern Western lifestyle has, in fact, affected our immune system's opportunity to develop these standard immune responses. And without this opportunity, with a lack of this general opportunity, our immune systems are becoming prone to respond by reacting to otherwise harmless substances and developing these allergies.
So not only do we have 12 million Americans who have food allergies, some may be aware of them, some may not, but there's also this growing incidence of food allergies in young children. I think the statistic that you have given is one in 17 amongst those under the age of 3, which is pretty shocking to see this growing.
It is. And in fact, keep in mind that some food allergies are going undiagnosed and are not on this matrix because people may not know or realize that they're having an allergic reaction. They might think that they have simply asthma or a food poisoning reaction.
Oh, that's interesting. So what are some of the symptoms of having a food allergy response?
Well, if you're allergic to something, basically, after being exposed to it, you would have a different reaction than what you would normally expect. You don't expect to get hives when you eat a red tomato or a piece of shrimp. That kind of a reaction would be an indicator of an allergic reaction. So I tend to think of the allergy as it is a valuable immune response, but it's gone haywire in the body. The body is naturally poised to do battle against these bacteria and viruses. This is a valuable function to keep the body safe, to kill viruses and bacteria. But in the case of an allergy, these substances that aren't germs and aren't poisons are triggering that same response, and a sudden release of chemicals will flood your system, including histamine. And these symptoms, they can be very mild. It could be rashes or hives or itching. But the problem is they can escalate quickly, within seconds even, to severe, with difficulty breathing, wheezing, swelling of the tongue, swelling of the throat, a drop in blood pressure, and in some cases even a loss of consciousness. And it is important for people to understand that a food allergy can be potentially fatal, and that even just trace amounts of an offending food can cause a very serious reaction.
Wow. So I have a question for you. We talk about food allergies, and then we also have heard of food sensitivities or food intolerances. So can you help us understand the distinction between those different categories?
You bet, and I actually tackle that topic in my family food allergy book. So the difference between a food allergy and a food intolerance, sometimes those two things can be confused. So a food allergy involves your immune system, whereas an intolerance is when your body has trouble digesting a food in the gut. It can make you feel badly, usually with an upset stomach, but it's not life-threatening. An intolerance is not a life-threatening medical condition. One of the most common intolerances that people probably know about, a very mainstream intolerance, is a lactose intolerance, which is a natural sugar that's found in milk, and it can produce a wide range of gut symptoms.
Right. So I guess one of the questions I have, when you have a food intolerance or food sensitivity, have you, in your research, seen ways to resolve them or overcome them without actually having to eliminate those foods?
I think that the best and first course of action, once you've identified a particular food, whether it's as just a potential allergen or an irritant, certainly for the time being, avoid eating any of the food, but definitely don't experiment too much at home initially. A medical evaluation is a good idea at that point. It's completed by an allergist, and then a clear and definitive diagnosis is made, and you're not sort of experimenting on oneself. I don't suggest guessing. An allergist can absolutely confirm whether it's a sensitivity or an allergic reaction. There's a couple of different types of tests for food allergy. There's a skin test, and then there's a RAST test. And for a skin test, it's also sometimes called a prick test. A patient is pricked with a series of needles that contain the extracts of the allergic triggers, and then an allergist can observe you for welts or little red bumps to determine if you have an allergy. But for a very, very accurate and sophisticated blood test, a sample of your blood is actually drawn and then sent out to a laboratory for analysis. And that tends to be my preferred way of getting a very clear and concise snapshot of what's happening, especially when someone may have such a high sensitivity level to a suspected food that any administration, even just a little prick under the skin, could result in potentially serious side effects. And then you'll know what it is that you're dealing with.
Okay. So why don't we go through some of the top, the big eight, as you call them, the eight foods that, I think you said account for 90% of all food reactions. Let's have a walk through with them.
Absolutely. It's important for people to know that you can have a reaction to any sort of food, but which I dubbed in the Family Food Allergy book, the Big Eight. Those are milk, wheat, soy, egg, fish, shellfish, peanuts, and tree nuts.
Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit about each of these different foods? Are there distinctions within these foods? You know, do you find that there are certain types? What's the role of something like GMOs, which are known to be a factor in this increasing incidence of allergy, especially with things like peanuts and soy? So what are your thoughts on that, or what has your research revealed?
Well, my research has revealed that this GMO theory, and just to back up, that GMOs in 1996, these genetically modified organisms were introduced into our food supply. So basically it's become possible to insert genes that can make a plant, let's say, resistant to specific diseases or insects, and to make a plant easier to grow with less chemical weed killers and improve how they ripen. And with my own severe food allergy to seafood, one of the early GMO horror stories that I had heard about was this Frankenstein tomato, which is the strange hybrid of a modified tomato plant that was being genetically engineered to resist frost. And the way that these scientists determined that they could help this tomato to resist frost was to put and insert some protein from a winter flounder fish that has its own sort of natural antifreeze in its blood to allow it to survive in these extremely cold waters. And these scientists realized that if they could put this antifreeze into plants, it could be incredibly useful to them because, of course, frost damage costs farmers hundreds of millions of dollars every year and lost crops. Now, this particular antifreeze is a protein that's called the AFA3, so it's coded for by a gene. Now, when this gene was actually put into these test tomatoes, lucky for me, it didn't actually provide this much anticipated frost resistance, and so these fishy tomatoes were never brought fully to market. But it poses a very interesting question, which is, if you couldn't eat flounder without an allergic reaction, what would happen if you ate these fishy tomatoes? I mean, most proteins, not all, but most proteins are readily destroyed in our stomach and in our small intestine, and they're broken down into their constituent amino acids and then just absorbed into our bloodstream, regardless of whether that protein comes from a tomato or a cow. It's generally oblivious to their origin, but in the case of the GMOs, what's so fascinating is, if we are what we eat, then are we what we eat eats? And we've got all these regulatory oversight bodies in the world telling us that genetically modified foods pose no harm and that to date there are no documented ill effects. But this is a really prevailing and compelling emerging theory, Dr. Selman.
Well, you know, I've had Jeffrey Smith on my radio show, and he has been a huge force in revealing what's going on with the experiment of genetically modified foods, and he has definitely found that there's a greater incidence of allergies from people who are eating more and more GMO foods. One of the reasons is because of the impact of these, the changing of the DNA of the bacteria in the gut. So when we're eating foods that have actually been altered, they have been genetically altered, that when our gut the gut bacteria interacts with these foods, it's actually conveying other DNA information that is altering our gut. And so much of the immune system is found in the gut. So when we are impairing the functioning of our little microbiome and changing the DNA, we are really participating in a great experiment, which doesn't look like it's going really well.
Agreed.
Yeah, interesting, huh? So, you know, I guess the message here on this point is really to help people understand you do not want to be eating your GMO foods, which, as it just so happens, so many of those allergy foods actually are genetically modified, such as the soy products, and corn is another one that's high GMO food. You know, so it seems to have a correlation, and we're just beginning to really understand the consequences when we play around with genes and insert different things, or insert, you know, like the one of the functions of things like soy is that they can withstand higher exposure to certain pesticides, which have been robbing the body of key vitamins, minerals, enzymes that support the immune system. So, yeah, I think it's really a wake-up call for all of us to understand why we do need to commit to organic foods, GMO foods, because, as you have experienced many of these alterations, whatever is going on, whatever the instructions are with our genes, it can be inherited, and we can pass it on to our children.
Agreed. And it's interesting you mentioned soy, because although soy is found in so many food sources, there's hidden soy also in everyday items like body lotions, even some enamel paints, fabric finishes, paper, printer inks. It's almost impossible to avoid soy now in day-to-day life.
It's true. You really have to be diligent, which is why it's so good to just prepare your own food. And then you know what you're getting, you know. It is sneaky. It does get in there and create a lot of havoc. And since the vast majority of the soy products are all GMO, we've kind of entered this world unknowingly, and it's all around us. So we do need to have these conversations so we can pay attention. Have you encountered a wonderful Dr. Doris Rapp? Have you had the opportunity to connect with Doris?
I have not.
Okay. So Doris Rapp is a pediatrician who's been very involved with kids and allergies, and she has been a leading figure in alerting people to the foods, the sugars, and sometimes the gluten and toxins in the environment, chemicals in the environment. And she actually has done, her books are really fascinating. I think you'll find them quite interesting because she can, well, in her book, she has pictures of drawings of children who have some reaction, some, you know, allergic reaction either to a food or to a chemical. And when they have that exposure, they draw a picture of a person, they draw a scene, and it's almost illegible. They can't even write because it affects their brain. And then when they're clear of that allergen and they draw the same picture, now it's legible and they can, you can see the person, you know, and, you know, the scene that's going on. So it has this huge impact on our brain's functioning. And these kids are challenged at schools. And the other thing she has said is that when you see these children that have food allergies, and I look around, you go to shopping malls, and you can see kids in strollers and things, they usually have dark circles under their eyes. They may have
the
creases, right? And they have creases, I think it's what, above the nose, or on the tip of the nose. And are there any other of those telltale signs that this child is having a, you know, demonstrating the signs of severe immune responses and allergy issues? What else? What else? Do you know some of the other
mood? Yes, mood with an infant and a very young child, and often when there's a very an unusually colicky baby, it's because they're having a difficult time processing the food. It's not just a fussy baby, and as you'd mentioned, those purple sacs under the eyes are very allergenic. Telltale sign for the food allergies. Another thing that I've noticed with young children whose palates are becoming refined and when they begin to get language skills, they'll often complain that they don't like the food that they're allergic to, that they'll fuss and they just don't want to eat it, as though their body is telling them very clearly and loudly something about this food.
Yeah, so fascinating how the intelligence of the body is really helping us to become alert to the fact that, you know, what we're doing is really not working for us and we need to stop it.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of wonder, because so many children are fed soy infant formulas when they are very vulnerable, right? Or, of course, a lot of soft drinks, which is terrifying, or a lot of wheat products. You know, these are foods that are, when they're introduced early to a young and undeveloped immune system, can really wreak havoc, you know. So no wonder we're struggling as a population. Because, you know, if you have a population of 1 out of 17 under 3-year-olds are showing signs of allergies, you have children with really compromised immune systems. So what else
Absolutely.
Is going to be happening to them down the track? And you know, maybe this is a good moment to just stop so we can have our break, and then we come back. We can talk about some of the consequences of children who, if they, as infants, are found to have food allergies, and if they don't take steps to remove those foods and maybe support their health, what could be staring them in the face down the track? So lots of really interesting information to explore. So let's just stop here. We'll be right back and continue this conversation, an important conversation about this growing incidence of allergies. So this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we're talking all about allergies, and we have Mireille Schwartz, who is the author of the Family Food Allergy Book, A Life Plan You and Your Family Can Live With, and she is also the CEO and founder of the Bay Area Allergy Advisory Board. So what's the best website, Mireille, for people to go to?
www.allergysf, as in San Francisco, allergysf.com. That's how you can find us.
Okay, great, allergysf.com, because I think people really need to understand more about allergies and find ways to help them survive and thrive with an allergy.
Absolutely. That's the key. You know, if you will, there are these benefits of having food allergies. which are legitimate and tangible. As you said before the break, you do know where your food is coming from, beyond just sort of the general awareness of what you're eating. There's also this learned responsibility at a young age, like I did with my daughter. There's a creativity with your own food in the kitchen. And it's easy also to share and celebrate milestones with your family and friends without always making food that focal point.
Exactly. And I just want to go back to what we were talking a little bit about before the break as we're learning more about this problem and the fact that our immune system is, you know, reacting in such a strong way. In fact, for some people, it reacts in such a manner, you get such an allergic reaction, everything swells
yes.
up, and chronic inflammation going on. What do you see in your experience as an activist in this area? What are your concerns for these young children who may be having allergies and because of their exposure to certain foods for the long term?
I think that our relationship as a culture to food needs to be healthy for us to be healthy, truly. And I think that a lot of these families with a new diagnosis of a child's food allergies, it's a very difficult time of adjustment. It's also not safe to assume that a family and friends will automatically immediately remember to avoid these reaction-causing foods right after you first told them about a child's allergy. And so I think there can be this anxiety for young people around food. I've also found when I speak with children in the hospital or at schools, the stigma that I think a lot of the parents and adults don't want to face is that truly, at their most fearful, these children articulate that their concern is that they could die from their food allergies. And that sort of is a relationship to food that as a culture, that's not something that we want to perpetuate. We certainly don't want to lie about the severity of the food allergies. But I think getting further and further away from food being such a focal point of so many activities and celebrations helps, because there is a wider range of experiences that families can have. There's other ways to share time and celebrations together that don't have to be so food-centric.
So let's talk about what are the solutions. What do you think? I know in the cover of your book, you say, helping families thrive by addressing one of the fastest growing public health concerns that has no cure. So
right.
In your research, people who have really severe allergies like you do to seafood or to crustaceous foods, animals, where you can get that really strong reaction, in your experience, there's no way to resolve it? No way to heal?
Well, there are two ways that you can really ameliorate this and help to marginalize it in your day-to-day life, that you can survive and thrive, as you say, with your food allergies. A combination of label reading, and then it's sort of the buzzword, but it is the truest and best way to reconcile a food allergy. It's epinephrine. And that's a synthetic adrenaline that can reverse the severe symptoms of an allergic reaction in literally seconds. And it's loaded up into an auto-injectable device, and one shot can stop an allergic reaction in its tracks. It is considered the first and best line of defense in combating food allergies. So this auto-injector, it's a device that administers a dose of epinephrine that's just injected into the user's thigh, through the clothing even, when they're having an allergic reaction. And by injecting it into the thigh, it delivers the medication through the body faster than taking an oral dose, which of course would have to be digested before entering your bloodstream. And how the epinephrine works is it raises the dangerously low blood pressure by tightening the blood vessels. And epinephrine, as it races through the blood, eases breathing by simultaneously helping the lung muscles to relax, and it reduces the swelling in the throat and the face. And then as the heart rate increases as the blood pressure rises, It acts to deliver the epinephrine faster throughout the whole body. So this is the best way that you can stop an allergic reaction in its tracks. Some people call them EpiPens. There are a few different ones on the market, but it is, in essence, it is the same mechanism. It's an auto-injector device.
Hmm. You know, I have friends who have studied techniques that are working with more on the food sensitivity than these uh-huh. really strong life-threatening allergy reactions, but there's a more subtle allergy sensitivities, food intolerances, and they have had great success in retraining the immune system with techniques such as NET, which is an allergy elimination technique. There are other allergy elimination techniques. I think that even working with, in some cases, hypnosis has gone in to help get to the source and retrain the immune system. So I've seen that with food intolerances and food sensitivities. I think the real classic food allergy may be a different category. I haven't had experience with them. And I personally don't do that in my practice. But I do have colleagues that have had great results.
Yeah, I have found that the best advice that I can give myself in the throes of one of these anaphylactic and severe allergic reactions is to stay calm, try to relax as much as I can, and focus on my breathing. And researchers have found that food allergy patients that have the best overall mental health were those who viewed themselves as basically healthy people with a condition they were in control of. And in contrast, those who viewed themselves as ill, severely ill, and demonstrated really poor coping strategies scored much lower on these indexes of psychological distress. I mean, it's agreed we can't control the way our bodies respond to a very severe anaphylactic food allergy. But knowing what you can do in an emergency, you know, doing your best to recognize how allergens appear on food labels, educating yourself and family, you know, to recognize these allergic reactions are among some tangible steps that you can take to develop, you know, this optimal mindset of control.
Right. So what else are you doing with your program in the Bay Area that may help people around the country and around the world?
Well, we focus, and this is the time of year that we do it the most, on school. School is understandably, you know, a very high-risk setting due to the such factors as just the general large number of students, increased exposure to food allergens, cross-contamination of desks and any other surface that you can imagine. We have an extensive and very comprehensive chapter on schools in my family food allergy book. Generally today, school districts, you know, expect to have students with food allergies, and most schools are equipped and prepared to deal with food allergies, and they understand the potential for these serious consequences. Many schools already have action plans to make sure that their staff are knowledgeable about these preventative measures, and they're pretty well prepared to handle even severe allergic reactions because they know this can save the life of your child. But one thing that we like to focus on is helping families to develop each child's personal food allergy action plan. It's like sort of a nice concrete step at the beginning of the school year to ensure that you can help your child even when they're away from home and at school. This emergency action plan sort of deals with your child's specific allergic reaction and specific symptoms and what treatment you wish for any school to seek.
Right. So are you helping people follow the roadmap that you've put together so they can establish their own area allergy support systems and organizations? Do you have a plan that's developed that people can model what you are doing?
Absolutely. And that's another big part of the Family Food Allergy book, because these really are steps that you can take in whatever community that you live in. Everybody likes to do some travel, whether you want to do it by boat, on foot, on an airplane, on a train. It's important, sort of the social reasons to be out and among your peers and peer groups and have celebrations. And food allergic people just sort of need a toolkit to be able to do that. And it's difficult to adjust to it, but once you have, it's easy to follow. Once you get used to the rhythm of it, it is easy to follow in any community, anywhere around the United States and beyond.
So what do you say to parents who have children, let's say, who have a sensitivity to peanuts? I mean, peanuts have become a huge issue for allergy reactions, partially because they've been altered and GMO peanuts are really common. For whatever reason, we've talked about that earlier in the show. But what is your advice to parents who send their kids off to play with friends or send their kids off to parties, birthday parties, where it's really common to have peanut butter or nuts and things? What would you advise them?
Well, I advise them to beware not just of a peanut, but of cross-contamination, which is also called cross-contact. And that occurs when one food comes into contact with another food and their proteins, the two proteins mix together on, let's say, for example, the same cutting board or the same utensil. And as a result, these two foods blend together in amounts so small that they can't really be seen. But then each food does contain small amounts of the other food. And especially with younger children who are so active with their hands, this cross-contact and this cross-contamination is a really real issue. Yet, at the same time, you absolutely want your child to have a rich social tapestry, to feel comfortable out within the home but also outside of the home, to have healthy relationships. One of the best things that young people can do is lots and lots of good old-fashioned soap and water hand washing, which really can help with this cross-contact.
So that's a good strategy. And then do you announce, so let's go back to that party situation. You have lots of kids being invited, their parents being invited. Do you say something to the host? Do you go to the party? In a very practical way, how would you manage a situation like that?
In a practical way, it's important that your child can participate in any event safely alongside his and her peers and classmates. I find that advance notice is everybody's best friend in this situation. It's extremely difficult for a host who is accommodating other people's needs as well for any social event to show up at the door and make the announcement. I tend to think that a very calm and clear communication in advance, prior to the event, a week or two if possible beforehand, sets the stage where a host can comfortably welcome you and your family into their home with some foresight, and then there aren't too many surprises. And it's also important, I think, to remind people, then again, maybe a second time, because it's not realistic to expect that they will automatically remember just because it's a passionate safety burning issue with someone who lives with it daily. Other people have their own lives and their own distractions. I think a way of having an ongoing conversation about it where you're soliciting help, not making sort of food police proclamations, but really sort of soliciting and asking for your community at large to link arms and be engaged with you with some notice, seems like that works a lot better.
Okay, great. And as we're kind of coming to the end of the show, how about giving us some suggestions for foods that could really be an allergy-safe food or sweets, desserts that people can introduce into their families and so people can, their families and the kids can enjoy, great foods, but also make sure they're safe.
Well, it's important to remember that one person's poison is another person's solution. So I tend to think of allergy-safe cooking, there are no absolutes. It's about staying flexible and offering substitutions. They're pretty easy to find now for eggs. There are these energy egg replacers. Wheat-free pasta is becoming increasingly available in the marketplace, made of quinoa, beans, rice pastas. The closest peanut butter substitute available that immediately comes to my mind is a wonderful product called Sun Butter, which is a sunflower seed butter made in a dedicated facility. Safe substitutes can be found in a number of places with a pretty good selection at your grocery store. There's Tofutti for an egg substitute. It's a different mindset to get used to it and to adjust to it, but there are a range of products that can be easily substituted for any of these eight allergens, and you can just sort of tweak them to find the perfect one that suits your taste buds.
And I noticed in your book, the back of your book, you actually have a whole list of foods that you can enjoy that are basically allergen-free, without the wheat, without the sugar, without the eggs. You can make everything. You can make everything from breads, muffins, to sauces, salad dressings, essentially anything you can want to eat.
That chapter was a challenge because we taste tested and did a year of baking in our house, and the goal was to come up with as many recipes completely free of the top eight allergens that we could and get as creative about it as possible.
Well, it looks like you did a really good job. And, you know, when we talk about recipes, I just wanted to ask you, how common is it to have an allergy to tree nuts? You know, I know that peanuts are a huge allergen. People have major reactions to the peanut. But what about almonds and Brazil nuts and cashews? How common are those allergies? And are they more sensitivities, or do they have full anaphylactic shock reactions when people eat them? Or is it just, you know, on an individual basis, you can answer that?
According to FAIR, allergic reactions to tree nuts are the second leading cause of fatal and near-fatal reactions to foods. There's an estimated 1.8 million Americans who have an allergy to tree nuts, because some of the people who are allergic to peanuts are also allergic to tree nuts and vice versa. There's this cross reactivity with the tree nuts. And some common tree nuts are almonds, macadamia nuts, pecans, Brazil nuts, cashews, walnuts, pistachio nuts. And there's even a lot of hidden tree nut food sources. It can pop up in barbecue sauce, in breading for chicken. There can be ground almonds, in deli meats. Like, for example, a mortadella meat contains pistachio nuts. Many gluten-free flour and gluten-free pancake mixes also use almond flour. Can pop up in salad dressings and salads. So that's a good one to really keep a keen eye out for, the tree nuts.
And, I mean, that's where you recommend people get really good at reading labels, because you just don't know what's hidden inside the ingredient of a product.
You do need to become an avid label reader. And fortunately, all these packaged foods now have ingredient labels that plainly state whether the product contains any of these big eight potential allergens. There's this law, it's called FALCPA, the Food Allergen Labeling and Consumer Protecting Act. It took effect back in 2006, and it requires that these labels containing the big eight note the allergen in clear and plain language.
Yes, I think it's a really useful thing to have. And I want to just encourage people to go visit your website, which is allergysf.sanfrancisco.com, because you have some recipes on that website, and you've got some great information, educational information, articles, so people can learn more about it, learn more about your work. What about the Discovery Channel that did the feature? Where is that available?
You can find that on the Discovery Channel's website. That aired last September, just under a year ago. It was narrated by Golden Globe winner, the actor Steve Carell, whose daughter has a milk allergy. And so he was inspired to join forces with the Discovery Channel. And it's a really interesting interesting documentary, clocks in just at 53 minutes, so it's not too long of a watch. It's full, packed full of data and true life stories. It was just fascinating to be asked to be a part of the project. And even when I first watched it and I thought I knew everything there was to know about food allergies, each segment I learned something new.
Well, that would be something that I think would be such a wonderful educational experience for everybody to watch that show. So all they need to do is go to the Discovery Channel
website.
I'm not sure the website, but just look up this Discovery Channel and people can find
it. It's discoverychannel.com, and you can just put in emerging epidemic or food allergies or even Steve Carell's name. And the documentary pops right up, and you can watch it. It's free. You can just click and watch the program on any device you have. My brother watched it on his cell phone. You can watch it from any little device you have. I guess that's the benefit of all these magical smartphones. And aside from all of this, I think that my overwhelming message that I like to share about the food allergies is that you can really develop these personal ways yourself to reduce your stress and keep your body and mind calm yourself. You know, relaxation reduces muscle tension, it decreases stress hormones, and it can even help to lower your heart rate, your blood pressure, which overall, anyway, greatly improves your quality of life.
And I absolutely agree with you. A couple of weeks ago, I had on my show a wonderful a man named Mark Waldman, and he's been very involved with mindfulness. He's put a program together called the Neuro Wisdom Program, and he takes people through these exercises of you know, learning to have this mindful approach, just to be calm, be centered. And he is working with a doctor, and they do functional brain scans, and they actually see huge changes in the brain when people do those mindful, calming, centering exercises. So, you know, as we start making these changes that occur within our body, we're also supporting the body to heal. So these are all really powerful strategies that I think make a big difference. You know, before we wind things up, I'm just wondering if there is anything that you want to be sure to share with my audience today that we haven't touched on already, or maybe just want to emphasize again.
I think it's important for people to remember that a crisis is really generally usually an opportunity. And while I was very little and suffering with my food allergies as an adult, the word that comes to mind when I think about my food allergies truly is gratitude, a gratitude to enjoy the foods that I can, a gratitude to have this education about foods, a gratitude to appreciate that there are other ways to salve yourself besides just eating and to not sublimate through food. Really, I think of this as an opportunity to live a life of gratitude.
And I just want to add that we are all grateful to you, Mireille Schwartz, for having that experience in this lifetime, because out of that you created the wonderful website, AllergySF.com. You're making a huge impact with your local community in San Francisco, but actually around the world, helping everyone to get more educated and empowered, find the strategies and the support to help us thrive when we are experiencing allergies in our lifetime, or our children or our family. So thank you for the wonderful work you're doing. And I just want to encourage everyone to get a copy of Mireille Schwartz's book, The Family Food Allergy Book, A Life Plan You and Your Family Can Live With, and visit her website, allergysf.com. Mireille, thank you so much for being with us today and the wonderful work that you are doing.
Thank you, Dr. Selman, yourself, for the wonderful work that you do raising these vital conversations. We appreciate you.
Thank you, and have a great day. And to all my listeners, have a wonderful day. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now. Mm-hmm.